I recently heard a distinguished historian of the modern world declare, "Once the modern world convinced itself that nothing is real except what we can see, taste, and touch, the modern world has gone downhill ever since." The modern world is dedicated to the principle that there is no reality, nothing afoot other than what we can see. This seems to be the attitude of the sales clerk who waited on me the other day. I was thumbing through the cantaloupes at Schnucks, and none of them looked very appealing. So I asked, "Do you have any more cantaloupes?" And the reply from the vegetable vendor was, "Well, what you see there is all there is. Either take it or leave it." I found this a grand summary of modern life. You look at the world, there are some things that may not seem right, a number of aspects of the world, of ourselves that might displease us, but as you grow up, as you make your way through life, you become older, you slowly but surely become the sort of person who's able to say, "Well, this is all there is. What you see is what you get. Take it or leave it." And most of us learn to take it rather than leave it. We take the world, asking only that we have the guts to take the world as it is and not as we would imagine it to be. What we see is what we get. And there is a certain dignity, a kind of courage not to whine, to not console ourselves with fairy tales, and live on the basis of what's before us, what is. This is all there is, live with it. And yet this approach, I don't believe, does justice to the complexities of vision. How do we see? You don't have to live very long before you realize that what you see might not necessarily be what there is. The brain filters out so many visual impressions that we see. What we see seems to be connected to some sort of template in the brain. When sensory images are fed through the optic nerve, the brain sorts through a collection of previously experienced images, makes matches, fits what we see into a pattern. And we're led to say, "There it is, this is a tree." And so we are somewhat justified in saying, if you've seen one tree, then that enables you to see them all. And yet, what does the brain do with things that don't fit into previously experienced patterns? What if our vision's out of focus? What if our seeing is sometimes limited by what we expect to see or have the courage to see? What if it's not so much a matter of you get what you see, but also a matter of you see what you've already gotten? You've seen those images that when you first look at them, they look like a picture of a young girl, a sort of black and white image of a girl with long flowing hair, and yet when you linger at it longer, you see that it could also be the head of an old crone. Or has anybody shown you that card that seems to have scrambled black and white letters on it? You look at it, it's hard to recognize any familiar letter of the alphabet, but you focus on it again, and you see in those markings, you see the word Jesus. The philosopher Wittgenstein drew a simple-looking round head with two long ears sticking up. At least that's what it looked like to me. What is it? Well, of course, it's a rabbit. But then Wittgenstein says, no, that's a duck. And the minute he says it, suddenly the drawing's transformed, and it really does look like a duck, looking up. What was earlier perceived to be the ears of a rabbit, looking down, now appears to be the beak of a duck, looking up. I think that Plato said that most of philosophy is founded on the principle that you can't trust what you see. Our perception is conditioned, warped, constricted, and unreliable. So this morning, Mary Magdalene appears at the tomb of Jesus. When she sees that the huge stone door of the tomb is rolled away, that the tomb is empty, she immediately saw what happened, the gospel says. Obviously, somebody had stolen the body of Jesus. She did not know where they had put him. Even when an angel appears and asks her why she's weeping, Mary still says that somebody had stolen the body of her Lord. It's not until Jesus himself appears to Mary and calls her by name that she begins to see. Even then, she at first thinks that the risen Christ is a gardener. Mary just can't get it out of her mind that she's at a cemetery, a place of death, a place of loss. She can't refocus her eyes even when the angel speaks to her, even when the risen Christ is standing in front of her. Later on, we're told the story of Thomas. When he hears the report that Jesus' body is missing and Jesus has appeared before some of the other disciples, he says unless he sees the wounds that killed Jesus, he will not believe. After all, the one believable thing about Jesus is that he's dead, crucified, and buried, with large holes in his hands and a gaping wound in his side. That's reality. And then the risen Christ appears and tells Thomas to touch the wounds. And Thomas exclaims, "My Lord and my God." I don't think it's fair to call him doubting Thomas. It wasn't that Thomas refused to believe. He believed. But he believed in what he could see. And what he could see was death, failure, annihilation, and destruction. Mary was the same. Until Jesus called her name, her vision was out of focus. Until the risen Christ asked Thomas to touch his wounds, Thomas could not see. What does it take to get us to see what's there? It's not simply enough to say, well, what you see is what you get. There's a matter of failed vision, inadequate perception. We've all had that frustrating experience of seeing something at a distant point off on the horizon on the landscape, and you say to your friend standing next to you, "Look over there." The friend looks, squints, but can't see it. "Over to the right," we say, "just beneath the hill to the left of the house." It's a frustrating experience. The thing is so obvious, so apparent, but the friend just doesn't get it. We attempt to point to landmarks, hoping the friend we'll move from seeing those apparent objects to seeing the less apparent object. But it's frustrating. What enables us to see? What is it that can grab our heads, turn our eyes in the right direction, bring everything into focus? For Mary and Thomas, it was the risen Christ. He didn't leave them to their own devices. He did not expect them to build upon their past experiences. He didn't rely on their misperceptions. Rather, he came to them. He spoke to them. He encouraged them to touch his very body. He turned their gaze away from what they expected and were accustomed to seeing to what was revealed. Maybe that's why we call Christianity a revealed religion. You can't see it until it is revealed, given to you. Until one who's experienced the gift of the presence of the risen Christ, then your eyes come into focus. Most of the time, we see through a mirror dimly, as St. Paul puts it. Occasionally, by the grace of God, things come into focus and we see face to face. That's Easter. It wasn't just that Jesus was raised from the dead. It was that Jesus was raised from the dead for us. He returned to his friends, revealed himself to them, and enabled them to see and believe. I've tried to argue people into believing in Christ, but it's a frustrating experience. For even if I had the wits to be able to convince someone in the risen Christ, someone more eloquent than I could just as easily argue them out of belief. No. Deep, life-changing Christian faith isn't based on arguments, on reasons. It's based on an encounter with the risen Christ. We believe simply because he comes to us and he gives us that which we cannot give ourselves, a reason to believe, a way to go on, a path out of doubt into faith. Frederica Matthews Green, who has preached from this pulpit, has said, "I didn't become a Christian because somebody with a Bible badgered me till I was worn down. I wasn't persuaded by the logic of Christian theology or its creeds. I met Christ, and that was, at the time, a big surprise and pretty disconcerting." She said, "I was pretty dismissive of Christianity. To be more accurate, I was contemptuous and hostile. Though raised in a minimally Christian home, I'd rejected the faith in my early teens. I remained spiritually curious, however, and spent the following years browsing the world's spiritual food court, gathering tasty delights. The core of my homemade belief system was the life force, a raw energy of life I'd concluded was the essence of God, and the various world religions were poetic attempts to express that truth. I selected among those scraps of poetry as they pleased me. My senior year in college, I gained a startling insight. I realized that my selections were inevitably conditioned by my own tastes, prejudice, and blind spots. I was patching together a Frankenstein God," she says, "in my own image, and it would never be taller than 5'1". If I wanted to grow beyond my own meager wisdom, I'd have to submit to a faith bigger than I was and accept its instruction. So I became a Hindu. But on her honeymoon, she and her husband wandered into a church in Dublin, Ireland. As they walked in, she felt self-conscious. She said to her husband, 'You know, Hindus can't travel to Europe without being exposed to some church architecture.' But then," she said, "she strolled down the dimly lit building. She admired the stained glass windows and stonework. She said, 'Eventually I came upon a small stone altar. Above it, there was carved a white marble statue of Jesus, with his arms held low and his heart exposed on his chest, twinned with thorns and springing with flames. This depicts an apparition to a French nun in 1675. Frederica heard Jesus say to her, the nun heard Jesus say, 'Behold the heart which has so loved mankind.' Frederica said, 'I can't really explain what happened next. I was standing there looking at the statue, and then I found myself on my knees. I could hear an interior voice speaking to me, not with my ears. It was more like a radio inside suddenly clicked on. The voice was both intimate and authoritative, and it filled me. It said, 'I am your life. You think that your life is your name, your personality, your history, but that's not your life. I am your life.' The voice went on, 'You think that your life is the fact that you're alive, that your breath goes in and out, that energy courses in your veins. But even that is not your life. I am your life. I am the foundation of everything in your life.' And in an instant, her world was changed. For the first time, she saw true reality." I think Easter was something like that. I think it could happen to you. Amen.